Hi, this is Brian Calvert. Recently, I was able to sit down with Pastor Terry Kylo, a man I met nearly a decade ago. The conversation you're about to hear is about his efforts to heal the divide in this country. For some, it's over religion. For others, it's political in nature. For Terry, it's personal, as you're about to hear. I hope you enjoyed the conversation, and at the end, I'll give you his website where you can find more information about this unique movement.
When you and I last visited, Terry, you were kind of on the forefront of all of this. The whole idea was uniting the faith community in a way that it had not been united before, and it was basically over your concern over the divisiveness that had been happening in the community.
Yes.
Give us kind of that primer of how this all started.
Yeah, so I began to be really concerned about the state of our democracy, as many of us have been. I was really concerned about the state of our democracy, like, you know, for a long time. And I saw the divisiveness on the rise. And what I saw in like 2014 and 2015 was a lot of anti-Muslim bigotry that was on the rise. And I learned in the middle of that process that there were very well-funded hate groups making that happen. And the problem with that kind of dehumanization is that it leads to violence against groups. And the other problem with that kind of dehumanization is that it doesn't just stay with one group. It moves from one group to another group to another group, and it continues to like create a dynamic of dehumanization that can tear a community apart, can tear a country apart. And we've seen many examples of that in the history of the United States as well as other countries. So I began to work to counter anti-Muslim bigotry in 2015 and actually left parish ministry to do that full time, because I got so busy with it. And I've done something like 90 public events. About 30 of those were pretty major events across the state. We don't just do those in big cities. We did them in small towns. We did them out in all kinds of communities across the state. We created a multimedia campaign to counter anti-Muslim bigotry. And I've also worked with lots of wisdom traditions and lots of wisdom communities to bring us together to stand against this kind of dehumanization, no matter what community is being targeted at the moment.
Part of what attracted me to come visit you way back when this all started, was, you know, I think a lot of people are very judgmental when it comes to ministries about, you know, they talk the talk, but do they walk the walk? And I think at the time, there were probably a lot of denominations, a lot of churches that would speak out against that, but maybe that was as far as it went, and it didn't. You were the first person I had ever met from a denomination very far removed from the one you were speaking up to protect. Mm-hmm. What denominational background did you come from, and why did you feel it was so important to do what you were doing?
So I'm a Lutheran. I'm part of the moderate to progressive sort of version of Lutheranism in the country. And in seminary, we learned about the role that Lutherans and Lutheranism played in the development of the Holocaust. And I remember coming downstairs in the cafeteria, eating lunch. We were very silent that day that we learned all about that. And I remember saying that if I see something like that happening while I'm in ministry, I'm not going to be silent like so many of the Lutheran pastors were in Germany. And so I saw that kind of thing happening to our Muslim neighbors. Now, it's been happening to many other neighbors as well, our indigenous neighbors, African-American neighbors, and it's taken me a long journey to like actually see it when it happens. But I saw that same kind of dehumanization happening toward Muslims, and I realized that as a Lutheran, because of our tradition, because of the past mistakes our tradition has made, that it was on us to stand up now and learn from our past mistakes and behave differently.
Mm. Introduce me to your friend here.
So about 2.5 years ago, I had lunch with Kay. Her Lushootse name is Squaha Alitza. And Kay and I have become really dear friends. In fact, she is my sister, and her brother Jay is my brother. And so we're family now. And I began to talk with Kay toward the end of COVID, you know, about my continuing concerns, increasing concerns about the state of democracy. And so Kay and I have been doing a lot of work to counter anti-Indigenous bigotry. We've also been doing work to build this program called Let's Go Together. And she's been an important conversation partner for me in terms of developing the program. And so Kay and I have been doing all kinds of work, and we talk multiple times a day about all kinds of things.
Kay, I read the stories all the time about violence against people from your community. How bad is it? I mean, you're on the inside. You know this. What are you facing as a community?
I think what we're facing more are pre-assumed identities, what we believe about the Native community. So one of the reasons I got involved in this is that I want to give people a full picture of the Native community, the history, the historical trauma, and the healing, so that when our community meets our Native community, they have a better, richer, and fuller identity of what that looks like, right? And then when you sit down and you're present, you realize there's more depth to a relationship. And from the Native community, you have a story too. And so you start to build bridges. And in each community, as you do that, communities I may not know, certainly I found in Skagit County, so many people do not have relationship with the Native community. But if I build bridges and represent, it's going to be easier for my children's children, that the more people know about our community and the, how amazing it is, it's going to be an easy, a much easier journey, right?
Be real with me for a moment. The first day this guy walks into your life, so you're meeting the guy from the Lutheran background for the first, probably what he believes and what you believe don't completely jive. What were you thinking the first time you met Terry?
I actually invited him to lunch. I heard about this man that was working in anti-Muslim, anti-Jewish bigotry, and it was a time a few years ago when things had got so heated up and it seemed so helpless in the community. I said, I want to meet somebody who's actually doing something about it. So I invited him to lunch. He was a friend of my brother's, and we hit it off immediately. And I can't really say that we find... I've invited him into our tribal celebrations and our namings, and I learn a lot from him. He learns a lot from me. He teaches me a lot about other faith communities, other groups. I can't say we have been far apart. All right, we haven't been apart on anything. It has been an amazing relationship where we see that we need to bring people together, know that if you're in relationship, we're going to have better communities, and it's harder to hate somebody when you're sitting at a table with them, right?
Terry, I've known you since the beginning of this. What kind of an affirmation was that for you to get a phone call like that?
Very humbling, honestly, because there's any work that any one of us can do is so small. I mean, I feel the work we've done is just so tiny compared to the need. And also that Kay would reach out. I'm just thinking about the courage and the kind of sense of hope that she brings and that her community really embodies. A community that has received so much trauma over the last 180 years, you know, here in the Pacific Northwest, mm-hmm. you know, it's around the Salish Sea, and to think of that, and the I'm humbled by Kay's sense of trust and hope, and a willingness to move forward, being fully conscious of the pain that's happened, and so what I mostly am is humbled by it. And I wonder sometimes, would I be able to do that if that had happened to my community?
Tell me about growing this. I mean, you guys are taking a big leap of faith, really.
Well, look, it's what we did during COVID is I sat down on Zoom, you know, with lots of people, literally atheist to Zoroastrian, you know, and everything in between. To talk about what's happening to our culture, what's happening to our society. And I asked a couple questions of them. And the third one was, what strategy does your tradition propose? What do human beings do when we're divided, when we don't know each other, when we're separated from each other? And every one of the traditions basically said, we got to sit down and eat and share stories and get eyeball to eyeball. Every tradition said we have to find something positive for the community we can do together. And the third one was almost all of them said we have to find ways to honor each other across lines of difference of tradition or culture or life circumstance. And so I started to think about, well, how could we operationalize that? And we realized that Skagit County was the perfect place to do it. because groups there, while people may know each other across groups, the groups do not relate to each other at all. Like, there is no interfaith, intercultural very much in Skagit County. And we're going to focus on areas across the state that are like that. And so Kay and I have been going out for a year and a half now, having one-to-one conversations with leaders of different communities and saying, look, what would happen if we had these three events that you brought some of your folk and our folk got to know each other and started partnering with each other? Because that lack of knowledge of each other takes all of the negative news we hear about each other on social media or wherever else, and we don't have a touchstone. We don't have a person that we know from the other group. So we believe all the negative news, and then we withdraw even further. And so Let's Go Together is really an attempt to help both support democracy, but also the future thriving of our community. And that's got to start with us knowing each other, even while on other days we may disagree about things. There are yet other days, like with Let's Go Together, where we can honor each other as respected members of the community. And that, I think, has the capacity to calm us down, mm-hmm. not only as individuals, but as groups. And I think that kind of action on the part of faith communities, wisdom traditions, and wisdom communities is a way for us to strengthen our democracy right now, because we're believing all of the bad stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to say a few more things. I think right now, so many people in our country have reduced their identity to their political ideology or their political party. And that's a horrible place to be. And so a lot of people will say to me and Kay, you know, like, well, what are you guys going to do about political polarization? Well, we don't think that we can solve Facebook with Facebook. We don't think we can solve politics with politics. We've got to solve that with face-to-face and people-to-people and group-to-group. And when people get together around those kind of identities, they kind of go, oh, I guess my political ideology is one of my identities. But it's not the only one.
It's interesting that you bring, because that was on my list of questions today. I know that there is a fine line between faith and politics, and, sure. and most people try not to mix the two. However, it seems like in these last 5 to 10 years, they've become very mixed. They've become, and your identity, your religious identity, maybe has become your political identity. How do you even begin to undo something like that? I mean, you mentioned that face-to-face conversation, but walking in as, you know, people of faith, how would you advise the average Joe to come in and start to deconstruct that?
Well, I think it's got to be through experience, Brian. And we're not going to sit down and do debate club at these events. We're going to get people to talk about their childhood, their favorite dish, when they were growing up. We're going to get them to talk about what their hopes are for the community. So we have to activate those other identities. So look, I think it's good when people of religious tradition or some kind of philosophical tradition, whatever that is, bring some of those values into the public square. But what's happened now isn't that we're bringing that into the public square. For some members of our community, their political ideology has become a religion for them. One way or another, they see other people as less than human, that our humanity is dependent, as I said, on our political ideology. And we have to help people experience other ways of relating, other identities that we share, to kind of decenter and sort of de-stress people a little bit around this whole political thing. So it's kind of like when you're in a marriage relationship and you're talking about whether to get a new car. You know, if the two spouses are talking about their new car every single time they talk, they're headed for a divorce, because they're implying that their relationship is dependent on whether or not this decision with a new car goes their way. And what we want to do is we want to use some real deep wisdom from these wisdom traditions. Again, atheist to Zoroastrian, that we need to know each other. We need to work for the common good together. We need to honor each other in public. And when I tell people about that out there in the community, they hear what we're doing. They often do this. They go, oh, thank goodness somebody's doing that. Because it's like we're all watching this thing happen, but we don't realize what we can do. And what we can do, I mean, we know how to do potlucks. It's not that hard. And so I jokingly say we need to unleash the power of the potluck, right? So it is within the role of wisdom traditions to not only have differences about policy and values, that's true, but we have to remind communities of wisdom and cultures in general within our country that there's a second issue we have. There are injustice issues in the world, but we also have an issue with being divided. And so on one day, we may differ about abortion or whatever other issue is out there. But on another day, can't we come together and say, yes, we disagree about some things, but we are human beings together and we recognize their humanity just like they recognize ours. And I think that is a democracy healing activity that is within the realm and the reach of every community.
Can I add to that?
Please. Yes.
So I don't come at this from a faith background. I'm Catholic. Spent a lot of times with Lutherans and Presbyterians. And I've met so many amazing friends. I've got to learn so many about different religions. But I come across this from our culture and teachings. And other people might come at it if they were formerly incarcerated. They're bringing all of them and their experiences together. So they might come in concerned that this talk of different religious organizations might be judgmental or barrier cause, what the people could be concerned about organized religion, and realize that you're coming in as people with all your stories. And so I don't necessarily come in it from, I'm not a pastor, I don't have a faith background, but what I bring is my cultural teachings, and different people bring in lots of things, which is the absolute beauty of this, right? It's absolutely incredible. We had a dinner where we had a Sikh, a formerly incarcerated, somebody in the LGBT community, a Catholic, and we had our first small dinner. And by the time they finished, they were laughing and enjoying each other. And for that group of people to trust and connect to each other, you could put them back down there together and they would just keep going from where they left off. That's pretty amazing. It's different people, different backgrounds, where you might not always walk across the bridge by yourself, but this gives you that opportunity.
And you might not always walk across the same bridge.
Right, right.
Tell me, and I'll give you a second because, the browser is just going to keep on rolling here. And I'll give you a second to think about it. Tell me about your favorite reaction when somebody hears your story for the first time in the context of what you're trying to do, that aha moment they have or that reaction that they have that confirms in you that you know you're doing the right thing.
For me, because I talk about our history, historical trauma and healing, many people in Skagit County don't have a really good awareness of the Skagit people because we weren't recognized till 1975. So they didn't even know. A lot of people still don't really know much about us. And they certainly don't know about history because it hasn't really been taught. So when they get this fuller picture and you can see that they're processing the wholeness of that identity and the resilience of being here, mm-hmm. and then, they get past the, I'm sorry about that, because guilt does not do anything. It's to understand and be in relationship. When they get to that space and they want to know more. And then, of course, I want to know more about them. I love people's stories. So when they want to know more and they just don't have to kind of go and say, boy, that felt really bad. I want to know more about you. I want to know more about your culture. That is the best place to be.
Oh, my gosh. I love this. Terry, when I read the press release, you are expanding and you're growing this. Give me some details. What are you doing?
Well, so our organization, Paths to Understanding, is the rebranded version of the Tracy Levine Center or Camp Brotherhood that got its start on Como TV in 1960s through the 70s with the challenge program that Rabbi Levine, Father Tracy, and several Protestant pastors did together. And so we're continuing that work, and Jeff Renner from King 5 News in time past is running a TV program. So we do that. We're also really concerned about countering anti-Muslim bigotry, anti-Semitism, and anti-Indigenous bigotry. And we have programs that work on all of those, primarily working on people in different wisdom traditions to understand how to get into partnership work through some of their own issues and then begin to get into partnership, actual real relationship. And then we're just getting ready to start a new youth program, because we realize that we have to, as Rabbi Levine and Father Tracy said, engage youth in getting to know each other and allow them to grow as leaders with each other to help heal some of the divisions in our society. And then this issue with Let's Go Together, and we're soon to be putting out a toolkit for a project called Potluck for Democracy. And that's just a one-time meal that we're encouraging people across the country to take up, get as diverse a group of people as they can from life circumstances to wisdom traditions to philosophies, whatever it is, and just get them together for one experience of being together in the same room. And so we're really concerned about our democracy right now, and we're trying to activate, along with a lot of other partners like Seattle University, Center for Ecumenical and Interreligious Engagement, and many other groups, to try to help communities of wisdom like churches and mosques and temples, and to realize their power. And their power right now is not just like one like Facebook post or some kind of sermon or a prayer. I mean, those are powerful, but it's the power to get people together and help us realize that despite all the noise that we hear about each other, all the negative news that comes through Facebook because its algorithm is designed to be negative, is that we actually, when we know each other, we're going to like each other and we're going to be less anxious. And that's going to help us put some of these policy differences and some of this partisan, my team versus your team, into a little bit more of a perspective. Because I don't think we have to live like this. And that's the thing. Everywhere I've gone to do public events, I just have this passion in my guts that says we don't have to live divided like this.
I appreciate the hope. And I think there are a lot of people who may have heard what you just said and say, but Terry, anti-Semitism seems like it's at an all-time high now. How do we turn this back? How do you even begin? I mean, we're hearing about attacks on a daily basis again. And we, there was a quiet period where things seemed to be getting better. And now all of a sudden, the fires are being stoked. Yeah. How do you, I mean, can you really do it with the method you're talking about?
I felt in my guts and through research, right, that the anti-Muslim bigotry that was on the rise in 2015 and 2016 that was stoked by a lot of money would increase a dynamic of dehumanization that would impact many groups. Dehumanization is a process that says that what I love and value, it proposes that what we love and value is threatened by a group. And so therefore, we have permission to do violence to protect the group that we love. That's what dehumanization does. And so that dynamic of dehumanization focuses on different groups at different times. And right now, both the Muslim community and the Jewish communities have all been receiving incredible threats and violence against them this last fall. And so what I want to say is we need to have a lot of different strategies. I believe also, and this is why I wrote this book, Go and Do Likewise, that Christians have to do a lot of work around some of the anti-Semitism that has been woven into our tradition for a long time and that has metastasized into anti-Indigenous bigotry and anti-Muslim bigotry and other forms of racism. So Christians have to do a lot of work. We have to go back and remember that Jesus' first words were repent, which isn't a word that says you're bad or you should feel guilty. It's a word that says you have the power because God is with you, because the Creator is with you, you have the power to change. You don't have to live like this. That's what that word repent really means. And so there is work at all kinds of levels we have to do, both between wisdom traditions. Christians have a ton of work to do. But I believe that the most powerful strategy at the moment that is going to help us get through a difficult decade. And I believe we have a difficult decade ahead, no matter what this year's election, whatever it brings. We have a difficult decade ahead, and we're not going to get that by talking about each other or by hearing about each other from third parties. We're going to have to get to know each other. But to do that, we have to address the bias and bigotry that we have toward other groups. And it's been fascinating the last, 8 years now, I've been in maybe 200 congregations. And even the ones that have done some work at some point during that meeting, they'll realize, wow, I do have bigotry toward Jews. I do have bigotry toward Muslims. I do have bigotry toward indigenous people. And what I say to them when that happens isn't, you're bad, you know, how dare you, you're terrible. What I just say to them is, I do too. And so I'm on a journey with you into our common humanity.
And you have the power to change.
And they do it in the moment that they're willing to acknowledge their bigotry. That's the moment of change. Like, that's the moment that some people will shame them. And that's just wrong. That's a moment of courage that should be, we should lean into that and say, good for you for recognizing that. And I just want you to know that I am still bigoted as well, and I have a lot of work to do. And I'll say one more thing about that. After I did many events in public with American Muslims, especially between 2016 and 2019, and after every event, I would get on the phone with them on the way home, because we usually had to drive a long way, and I'd say, how did I mess up tonight? And they trusted me enough eventually to tell me how. And sometimes I forgot. I couldn't sleep. Like, I couldn't sleep because it was so painful what they said. But I realized that that work is for my own good, right? And so it was an honor to do that. But I'm still on that road too. And what happens if we just were walking down that road together with all of our best in brain, with all the best our intellect can bring, with all the best our academics can bring? But there's an awful lot of this that has to do with heart. And has to do with relationship.
Can I ask him a question?
Yes, you can.
Terry, what's the number one reason, pretty high up on the list, when you ask people, you know, what prevents you from walking into other communities and being in relationship with other communities?
Okay, you know exactly what it is. It's people are fearful of making a mistake. Yeah. And that's why when I was doing, I was invited to the naming ceremony by Kay and her brother Jay to play a specific role, I was asked afterward to go up to the front of the line and eat food, get my food. And I felt really uncomfortable with that, and so I went to the back of the line. And I was being so humble that I was actually being arrogant, because everybody in that room knew that prayer people and elders can go to the front of the line, that that's expected. And so, but then her brother Jay, when I said, yeah, I made a mistake, he said, no. Call it a misstep. He says, sometimes Western people are so hard on themselves, they never begin. They're afraid of making a mistake. And he said, you're going to make mistakes. But actually, it's just a misstep. And missteps can be forgiven. Missteps, you can keep going forward. And so we tell that story to people, you know, out there, and it, you can see folks relax. And I've also say to people, okay, if you make a misstep, well, what do? You say, oh, I am sorry. Tell me more about that so I won't do it again. And people are so gracious, you know, in all of these communities about that.
So the top reason that people don't get involved with communities they're not familiar with is they're afraid of making a mistake?
Yes.
Then what part of the psychology of that is, because I would think it would be somewhere along the lines of they just think that they're better than those communities, that arrogance.
Well, this is maybe a very fine point, but both are kind of arrogant. One says we're better than the others and we don't need to deal with them. One says that we have to be perfect and be perfectly comfortable to be able to relate to them. They're both kind of in a frame of superiority in a way. But at least the second one is open to some kind of, and is starting to realize that there's another person there. There's another community there. And obviously the other piece, Brian, is that as human beings, we want to think well of ourselves. And so some of the hardest work I did was after finding out how I had messed up in a public conversation to support American Muslims or to support our Jewish neighbors, and I realized I made a major mistake. Again, misstep, but I made a public one. And part of what Western culture teaches us is that we're only acceptable if we're perfect, and if we make a misstep, then we're done, then we're gone. And boy, that's not the way life works. I certainly hope that's not the way life works.
I also challenge, the last time we spoke, because we speak to a lot of predominantly white churches, that risk. Go out and risk in a community that you're not comfortable with. Do I know, you know, what do you want me to call you? What's the proper protocols in your place? Because those communities live every day in a cross-cultural community. So you need to take the risk and not wait for this community you want to see, like the Native community, always taking the risk. So, you know, shore up. It's, I said, you're going to get rewarded for this because this is amazing, but you need to step up and take a risk. And it's okay if you, you know, mess up with whatever word you didn't know the right thing to call or say, but just kind of take it down and just visit, and it will be okay. But to put the expectation on the communities that you're not aware with, the Muslim, the Jewish community, the indigenous community, the Chinese community, they went so much recently with COVID, to put that risk for them to always come and make you feel comfortable is a high ask. So put the risk and step out and figure out how you can reach out and get to know those neighbors better.
I'm sitting here listening to you talk, and I'm overcome with emotion because I remember the first time I met you, there was a challenge, and you said something, and I will just paraphrase it because I don't remember exactly how you said it, but you said something about, you know, one of the biggest things, one of the biggest hurdles we have is that we're just afraid to interact with each other. We're afraid of each other because we don't know each other. And I remember taking that, and I came up to visit you in Skagit County, and on the whole drive home, I was just really chewing on that. And in the years since that first meeting, every time I take my dog for a walk, I say hi to everybody.
Yeah.
But especially when there's somebody who looks different or may be afraid of somebody like me, mm-hmm. I make sure that I've got the biggest smile on my face and that they know I am an ally. And it was just such a mind-opening experience to know that most of our fear, most of the things that we go through, most of the disagreements we have, is just because we don't know each other.
You're building human bridges.
It's just, it's incredible.
Reach out and offer your heart.
Yeah,
right?
It's incredible. And it's the simple things that you're doing. So
I walk on the road and sometimes with my dog, and I wave at every car.
They may not wave back. I've had that too.
Me too. But you know what? You know what's happened over the years? And then there's a couple other people that do it too. And so the cars actually pull over, you know, pull into the middle of the road a little bit and give a little more space to all the walkers on that road. Because two or three of us just started waving at people. In the grocery store, you know, I just try to say hi to people, just like you do. When I bought a car and something didn't work out quite right, I was nice to the salespeople and the service folks, and I brought them a cake after they got my car fixed. Because they get beat up all the time by people. And so there are so many things that individuals can do. And then, of course, we're emphasizing today what groups can do, mm-hmm. because we need group-to-group relationships and group-to-group honoring as well right now in this time where our divisions and our differences are being exaggerated and leading us to the point where we think we can't be with each other. And that's a lie, but we have to do the work both individually and collectively to come together and see each other as human beings.
We have covered so much ground in this conversation. I know that people have questions. Perhaps they want to be a part of what you're doing in a financial way, or maybe they want to have a meeting coming up. Can we send everybody to a website where they can find more information?
Yeah, our organization is called Paths to Understanding with an S. So www.pathstounderstanding.org. And you can find out more about all we're doing and our YouTube videos and our podcasts and all the stuff that we're doing right now. They can find out more there.